Hello and welcome to Spurs Israel. I am Rafi, today in English. I have here Hanan and Boaz, and the reason we are speaking in English is because of our guest, Flav from The Fighting Cock. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. I wouldn't get very far in Hebrew, so I'm very grateful for you speaking in English.
Yeah, well, thank God it's not German.
Well, yeah, indeed. We're going to come on to Harry Kane, I'm sure. But it's been an exhausting few days for all of us, no doubt.
Yeah, of course. This is only our second episode recording in English. We usually, as Flavio said, recording in Hebrew. So you're getting into a very exclusive list, you and Ledley King.
Amazing. Unreal. Yeah. Unbelievable. So... what company?
Two legends.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. But yeah, certainly Ledley King.
Yeah. Also you. Don't underestimate you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay, so as I mentioned, from The Fighting Cock, I think maybe the best podcast of Tottenham in the world, especially for us. I'm sure if someone will debate it, we'll fight him. But for us...
you got my back.
So it's a very big pleasure to have you here. And... if I'm not mistaken, it's your 13th season in the Fighting Cock.
Yeah.
So in a Jewish, it says Bar Mitzvah, which is Boaz, your you know.
Yeah, means you're obligated to, I guess, take responsibility for your actions. It's like the day you become from a boy to a man at the age of 13. So I guess, a podcast becomes serious before 13 seasons, but 13 is very much respectful.
Yeah, I mean, it's I guess it shows a level of dedication. It's interesting that you mentioned about responsibility, because in the early years of the Fighting Cock, we were much less, or we felt less responsible for what we were saying than we do now. I think a lot of what we talk about now is difference of what we might have done back in the day. Not a huge amount has changed in terms of the vibe and tone of the podcast, but we feel a level of responsibility for what we say, and should we say something that is out of line, then people very quickly remind us. So 13, I feel like we have grown up a lot in those years, and the podcast probably is a little bit more mature and rounded than it once was, but fundamentally it's still the same.
And if I can ask, how did you start the podcast? 13 years ago, I didn't know anything about podcasting, so I'm sorry I didn't listen to you.
No,
only in the last years.
I didn't know anything about podcasting 13 years ago. What it was I used to go to Tottenham a lot, to the stadium, and often if things weren't going right, I'd get frustrated with perhaps how the crowd were reacting to a certain sort of match, or players were getting stick where I felt they shouldn't do, or players of other clubs were saying things that irritated me, and I didn't really have a platform or an area to vent. So I started a blog back in the day called Cocks to the West, it was called. And it was on my mate's website, and I used to just write about that. And then I really got into starting to do media around Tottenham. And then I used to listen to the Spurs show a lot. When I was listening to the Spurs show, I didn't relate directly to the conversations that they were having on that show. So I had the idea of getting some mates together, and the conversations that we were having in the pub after the games, we would have around a microphone. And that is fundamentally what it is and what it was and what it remains to be. So that's how we started. My little brother was into sound and engineering, so he knew how to do the technical aspect. We found a way of uploading the podcast. It wasn't like now where you'd use Acast, or I don't know if this is boring, but Acast or Sports Social to upload, and they manage all the distribution. We had to do all of that ourselves. So yeah, it was a different beast back then. And I would say that we were really lucky because we benefited from the explosion of interest in podcasts. Like, we did what we did, but we wouldn't have become as big as we have now without that explosion. We were there before the crest of the wave. And the wave of popularity in the format took us along. So we benefited massively from that. And being consistent, like making sure you're out at least once a week, or now as we do it, at least twice a week. And making sure you're there at all times. I think that's fundamentally how we've managed to maintain momentum.
Yeah, I think...
You,
Sorry, boss.
You mentioned consistency. Yeah. Were there weeks where you were feeling like, I just can't do this? Like, yeah. You know,
yeah.
Villas-Boas days, those 6-1 results. How did you gather yourself and record?
Yeah, no, I mean, this week's been tough. I've got to be honest. After 13 years, it's this one has been tough because you're having to talk about something you really don't really want to talk about in a way that's in depth. You have to go in. We have to talk about it for an hour, so you can't skirt around the issue. You have to confront the idea that our best ever footballer probably is leaving the football club. So this week's been tough. And then you'd have, but weirdly, you mentioned like 6-1, like you're talking about the Newcastle game when we had to do was beat Newcastle. Was it 5-1 or 6-1, wherever it was, where we had Pochettino in the last game of the season. We had to beat Newcastle to finish above Arsenal and they beat us. We got smashed. In those moments, actually podcasting is really easy. For to do the podcast is really easy because you need your mates around you and to bounce off each other to make light of what is a horrendous situation we're all feeling terrible about. But once you start talking to your mates, you can start to compartmentalize and deal with what you've just witnessed. And so I always found, weirdly, perversely, that actually the podcast after really bad defeats, I found the easiest. The toughest parts, though, would have been, I would say, recently under Mourinho and Conte, where the mood around Tottenham was bad. It wasn't a bad result, but you can kind of see the vision as we sort of have now with Postecoglou. He's like, we may have some bad results that come, but there is a guy in charge that you can get behind and he has the right ideas. With Conte and Mourinho and Nuno, it just felt hopeless for me. And it was hard over a consistent amount of time or a large period of time to consistently produce conversations that are interesting for people to listen to, or we try to make them interesting to listen to. It isn't just a case of turning on a mic and just starting talking about Spurs. It has to be engaging and trying to create something that that is interesting to listen to / entertaining while you're feeling pretty hopeless about your club isn't the easiest thing to do in the world. So when that happens, we fall back on our relationships with each other. So we'll fall back on what we love about each other as mates and kind of focus on that. Like, we're going through this together. And that's what I think may be a key to why we've been able to maintain audiences even when things are going terribly.
Yeah, I think we can relate about recording when there is bad results. This season for us, it was awful season, and for us as podcast, we recorded more episodes than ever. So it's like a therapy.
Cathartic.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Hopefully next season it won't be like this.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay. I think we need to discuss the elephant in the room, which is now on his way probably to Munich.
Yep.
So Harry Kane. I get maybe when you will listen to this episode, he's already signed, and we will see him together with Thomas Tuchel, which will be such an awful picture. How's your reaction was when you saw? I guess you woke up this morning and saw the news, and how was your feelings?
I went to bed. It hadn't happened, but it felt like it was going to. And I knew that the minute I opened my eyes in the morning, as soon as I woke up, I was like, I'm almost certain that this will be done, and it may have even been signed. How was I feeling? I guess in the first instance, I didn't want to really read or see or do anything about it. The last thing you want to do when you first wake up is start thinking about Spurs and Harry Kane, although it's impossible at times not to. I just feel like eventually we had to be confronted with this situation. Eventually Harry Kane was going to move on. Either he one day retired, which would have been the ideal situation, or he is sold to another football club. And the way I kind of made myself feel okay about it, and when I say okay, there's nothing okay about this, but the way I managed to kind of reconcile it was that, what's the alternative? The alternative is that we keep him and sort of hold on to this vague idea or unlikely idea that he would sign a new contract with Tottenham, instead of going wherever he wants to at the end of the year for nothing. And if his wife was desperate to stay in London, then there was only one destination for him, and that would be Chelsea with Pochettino. Now, in my head, that's 10 times worse than what we've got right now.
Yeah.
You know, to see him playing in the Stamford Bridge under Pochettino in the Premier League, that's like the worst. So what I thought of this is like, well, he's out of sight, out of mind. I think you'll be surprised about how little we hear about Harry Kane now for the new season. You'll hear it if you're on your sports channels. Maybe it'd be different in Israel, but I think in the UK, we won't hear a great deal unless we're watching Sky Sports News, which not everybody does. So it's out of sight, sort of out of mind. He isn't playing in the Premier League. And we have £100 million, which you would think that Daniel Levy would invest in the first 11. You'd think that.
Yeah.
So it may be that we have to, while it's horrible and while we don't never want to see this day, it's not the worst way for it to have happened. It could be a lot worse in 12 months' time. That's my feeling. But I also feel crushed that I'm not going to see him play in Postecoglou's system next season as well. And maybe if we were a little bit more ballsy, we could have gambled and tried to get him to sign that contract. But there's no real right answer, I don't think.
You know, I wonder about what you're saying, that it's eventually we would have to deal with this. Harry Kane, no one lives forever, as they say. But I woke up this morning and, last night, and my thoughts are about the way, how this happened, how the things were run. You have, I think even back to when Conte left after his trash talk press conference, and you have all this time to prepare, knowing that he's leaving, you can prepare. And somehow we arrive 24 hours before our first Premier League game this season. And then you have this. And this is the thing I'm thinking about the most is how we got to this situation. How we handle the situation that the day before the first game, our top striker, as you said, our best player in the history of the club is leaving. And I don't know. I didn't even hear about anyone coming in to replace him. I wonder what your thoughts about that, about the
my thoughts are
the timing
that,
and
yeah, no, I get you. Yeah, it's not ideal at all, is it? It's ideally you would have had these conversations before the end of next season, began negotiating with these clubs and say, look, this is our fee, this is how we need to operate, and this is the money we need to get for Harry Kane, and by this date, so that we have enough time to solve the problem that he leaves, or as much as you can. But Bayern Munich didn't bid what was necessary to get him over the line, if you believe what's been reported, until yesterday or the day before. Like, it was 70 million plus add-ons at the beginning, and you're like, well, that's not enough. So I think that I don't know what, and I know this isn't going to be popular, but I don't know what Daniel Levy has done wrong in this instance. I'm not his biggest fan, and if you've listened to the podcast, you know that I think that he should probably leave the club and someone else should come in, right? But in this instance, I'm not sure what more he could have done to manage this situation. Because Harry Kane has all of the cards and Bayern Munich are the only bidder. So what could he have done? I don't know what... It's not ideal, but I don't know how this direct example could have been rectified. But maybe I'm not seeing something.
Well, thank God for Harry Kane putting the pressure on, We're only August 11th. If he wouldn't have set that deadline that if I play against Brentford, I'm here for the season.
Yeah.
We would have seen this stretch out till August 31st. And deadline day saga with Daniel Levy, we're all familiar with that. So yeah, I think it was terrible. And just like Hanan said, it's like you get to a situation where it's like you hear that record scratch and you're looking and saying, do you wonder how I found myself in this situation? Let me take you back. But it's always like step by step, right? It's never like something, rash, that breaking news. It's always like little by little, another bid, another ejection, another bid. Time goes by, another day, another week. And yeah, I think we are in somewhat of trouble in the front, line. Our front man currently would be Richarlison, And did he score any Premier League goals last season? Did he have one?
At Anfield.
Yeah, so I mean, well, what are we doing?
I don't know if we will sign a direct replacement. I don't know who would be available. I had a shudder down my spine earlier and I remembered that Lukaku is being touted around by Inter Milan.
Yeah.
And the idea...
I hope not.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I don't know there are many strikers out there that fit the profile. Maybe Vlahovic of Juventus. Yeah. That would be a good signing.
There is also the Belgium gift. Orban, I think the name.
Yeah, he's 21-year-old novice, though. You know, this wouldn't be a replacement. It can't be a replacement for Kane unless he's magical. But yeah, it's an unfortunate situation, and it's one that you can't solve. No one is as good as he's the best number nine in the world. He's better than Haaland. He's better than Benzema was, and he's, you know, he's better than Lewandowski. He is the number one, and that's why he's gone for 110 million in with 6 months left in his contract at 30 years old.
So maybe we need to strengthen the other areas. Like, say, we have only Romero and VDV as defenders. Maybe take the money, put their son as a striker, and use the money for other places.
I think that would be the most sensible thing to do. Probably won't be the sexiest thing to do, but I think making sure Tapsoba gets in. If you had an option between Vlahovic or Tapsoba, given what we need, I would probably go for Tapsoba. Maybe.
Oh, for sure.
Or maybe we should buy both. Maybe we should be a bit more ballsy and actually just get in what we need and buy both.
You had an episode with the guy from Tifo, I think, about Tapsoba. Yes. I've never been more angrier at Daniel Levy when I listened to this episode. I was driving the car and I knew Levy will not buy him. And I'm yelling at other drivers, just buy Tapsoba, just buy him. It's impossible to understand the
Maybe
negotiation.
Maybe he will now, though, because we have the money now, right? We have this. You can't ignore the fact that we have a large chunk of this Harry Kane money was paid for up front, according to some of these news reports. So if that is the case, we have the money. And we can go into season, we probably will go into the season with Romero and Van de Ven with Sanchez or Dier as our backup. But one injury to Romero or Van de Ven, and you're in the exact same position you was last season, which can't be, you know, you look at what Arsenal are doing and they've upgraded Ramsdale. They didn't need to, but they've upgraded Ramsdale with Raya. That's the way a football club should operate. So, yeah, it would be nice if it does happen. We'll see.
Yeah, it's something that it happens very slow in our club, the upgrades. It happens only when it's too late. If it's Lloris, we only got now Vicario as a replacement for Lloris. It's his first season. He didn't show so much. I'm not sure what to say about him, if it will be a good signing or not, but time will tell. So it's just frustrating to see it continues to go like this. So hopefully these 2 weeks that we left for the transfer window, we will see something different and more active. This is only what I can ask for.
Yeah, agreed. And we spent a sizable amount of money considering we bought in Poro and Kulusevski in this window, but they were our players before, and the squad needs to be improved in the addition to them, especially now that the money is there with Kane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can easily see Daniel Levy saying, you know, money that came in for Kane is actually money I already spent. You know, I signed six, are we six or seven players that were signed this season, which is 6 times more than what Daniel Levy usually signs. And, you know, it's to be realistic, I would want to see more activity in the coming weeks, but I highly doubt it. I highly doubt that we'll show intention, you know, be more proactive, see maybe one or two signings come in. I really highly doubt it, especially if we win that first game against Brentford looking good. Because if the results are going our way, you know, Daniel Levy is going to say, well, if it ain't broken, why fix it?
funny you say that, because that's something that came out from the last podcast, is that the one of Daniel Levy's biggest failings is his inability to strengthen in a position of strength, to progress when you're in a position of strength, and instead of doing his best work when he has to be reactive, he has to be reactive now. Like, no matter what we do against Brentford, he has to placate, he has to understand the significance of Harry Kane leaving. And I'm sure he does. But the only way he can demonstrate that he truly does is if he gives us at least a centre-back. And, you know, and Postecoglou has come out and said, we're working on another deal to bring in another centre-back. Whether that'll be, forgive the pronunciation, but Schürrle of Torino, or more ideally, Tapsoba.
Hopefully. Or maybe a championship centre-back.
Probably, yeah.
You never know what he's cooking.
Yeah, you mean, didn't we bring in Phillips? You're not happy with Phillips? Not really.
At least we didn't take Langlais with us back from Barcelona.
I quite liked him. He just wasn't... Oh. It's just a 6 out of 10. He's like nothing special. And I remember reading a report about him, and his biggest failing in Barcelona, part of the reason why they knew they had to get rid of him is he can't... He isn't very good in the back four. So that tells you everything we need to know already.
Yeah. Okay. So Tottenham without Harry Kane, that's, what can we expect to see? We would be without our best striker. Who do you think will take his front on Sunday? Will it be Son or Richarlison?
Yeah. It'll be Son. It'll be Son on the left, Richarlison up top, and Kulusevski on the right, I'd imagine. But I think what happens on Saturday isn't really a barometer of what will happen this season. What the narrative I've been peddling is that perhaps if Harry Kane was to go, that now probably was the best time for him to go, because his goals will perhaps be replaced by the attacking philosophy that Postecoglou wants Tottenham to play with. So that there will be so many more opportunities, so many more shots on goal, that while in the previous system under Conte, you relied on Harry Kane to be there because the chances were few and far between, although perhaps the quality of the chances was high when we did get the ball into the box, it was on him to be as clinical as possible. This system wouldn't require a striker as good as Harry Kane for Tottenham to score goals, you'd think. It would be incredible if Harry Kane was there in this system, because how many goals would we have scored? But what we were asking basically is, can we replace the 30 league goals that Harry Kane gave us last year? So if Richarlison stays fit and plays number 9 all season, he might get 15 goals, I think.
Oh,
no chance?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think so.
How many of those will be offside goals?
Well, many. If we discount those, he would have got 20.
He will get a yellow card for taking off his shirt.
Yeah, that's true. He has to curb all of that stuff. But I think playing in this system, and any striker worth his salt, that I think between 12 and 15 is something you could is an acceptable return for Richarlison in this system. I might be optimistic, okay, and I'm allowed to be, right. Yeah. But
I would sign on that, but you know, he has a lot to go, and you know, a lot of work to do to find his confidence again. He is rock bottom.
I don't even rate him very highly. I think we overpaid for him, and I think I wish we'd have gone elsewhere, but we are where we are. I just think in this system, with him playing as a number 9 consistently, which is where he wants to play, that we may see a different Richarlison. He may take many more chances than Kane would have done to get there, but I think maybe 15 goals. I think, I don't know. Maybe you made me doubt myself now, but I'm sticking with it. 15 goals.
No, I'm all for it. Let's have Richarlison be our Benzema after Cristiano left.
There you go. Who knows? And then you need to find 15 goals from other players that wouldn't have otherwise scored in the previous system, which I don't think is, I think it's doable. I mean, Madison's going to, we'll get between 8 and 10. Lo Celso, maybe if he plays consistently, you know, 6 or 7, and then you're edging close to 30 goals.
Yeah, also Son didn't score a lot of goals last season, and Kulusevski also. So
exactly, that's my, in my most optimistic mind, before the season has started, that's where I'm at.
But at Maybe it's only because we're Tottenham fan and we're trying to find the best scenario.
What else can you do?
Yeah, so maybe realistically, can it happen?
That's my realistic prediction.
Oh, this is your realistic.
I'm not living in a fantasy world. This is genuinely what I think will happen.
But okay, we'll fantasy see. World, we're winning the title.
In a fantasy world, we finish third. My optimistic would be fifth, and Champions League, sixth would probably be more likely. But the journey towards sixth and fifth would be so much more exciting than what we've had previously.
Yeah, of course. If we look at the preseason, I think I forgot how much I love to see Tottenham play. From the last season, it was just awful to see it. And see the attack, the first game, I think it was against West Ham, the first 30 minutes, it was amazing. I felt like, I don't know, it's like an orgasm. It was so beautiful.
I've never looked forward to watching preseason games as much as I have done this preseason, even against Barcelona. And admittedly, that's not the Barcelona. But we went there and dominated the game for 60 minutes, pretty much. It was fantastic. And, you know, we've averaged over 120 shots on goal in four games. It's preseason. It doesn't mean a lot, but it shows you an intent and how we're going to play. And it's fine to be excited by that.
Yeah, it's all we have left to be excited about.
Yeah, exactly.
5 minutes into game week one, two goals.
But if we're speaking about West Ham, we played amazing and then we conceded two goals. So it's just Tottenham.
Yeah, it is. But you might not see a shift from that for the first part of Postecoglou's tenureship at Spurs. You know, there are warnings that have come with Postecoglou from fans that have followed him. And it says it does take time for this to click. And there are results that you think, oh God, that was a heavy result or heavy loss that Postecoglou and we will have to endure in order to get to where we need to be. Brisbane Roar, who are regarded as his team, the best team that Australia's ever seen, took a while to click into gear. Celtic lost big games in the first part of his time there. So where we are in a year will be different to where we are now. But based on everything that he's done previously in his managerial career, it does click and people love him. And Celtic fans were absolutely gutted to lose him. I know it's different, but they were.
Yeah, I think Hanan and I spoke before we started. There is the press conference of Postecoglou now, and all the things that he says, it just love the way he talks. He talked about the captain, about Kane, about everything. He's so honest and not trying to fool you like the previous manager. So it's so refreshing to see all this. Yeah. Hanan, you said that you want to see him getting mad. So,
I want to see. It's that side I want to see, you know, and I think, you know, I also think technically, you know, you see our squad now, how much we have 30, I don't know how many players in our squad.
36,
we need to see something. Yeah, so something has to be like, you know, ruthless. We want to see him also telling all these players, listen, this isn't the level. And, you know, I'm just dying to see how this is going to work out. What squad we're going to see in the 31st of August. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I think there's so much deadwood in the squad that it's not difficult to see who should be moved on. What's difficult is to find clubs that would be willing to take them. You know, Ndombele's been linked with Turkey.
Yeah,
I think that would be on a permanent deal. I think that would be sensible. It was really frustrating because Postecoglou said that he was open to working with any player in the squad. It's a fresh slate, and Ndombele wasn't able to be fit. And after a while, you got to look at, you know, it might have been unfortunate, but eventually you got to go, well, this just isn't going to work. So Ndombele, Rodon, Sanchez probably needs to be moved on. We managed to get rid of Winks, but there's you know, Tanganga. There's lots of players there that do need to be moved on. So yeah, you're right. It's interesting what kind of squad that's going to be there, and it needs to be boiled down to a group of players that are desperate to be a part of it.
You forgot the one and only.
Who did I say? Who did I miss?
Eric Dier.
He's not going anywhere though, is he? I think he's gonna,
He's going to bury us all.
he's got a year left on his contract. I don't see a world. Like, we don't have any leaders really left, traditional leaders left in the dressing room. I don't see a world where Eric Dier... I'm not saying he's good enough and he should be starting for Tottenham, but I don't think Eric Dier sold this summer.
You don't think he's starting on Sunday?
No, I think Van de Ven and Romero will start. The only way that he does start is if Van de Ven isn't up to what he needs to do in terms of tactically. He needs time to understand his role. But given how counter-attacking Brentford are and how good they are on the break, I think it's important that Van de Ven starts if he can.
You mentioned the leaders. I don't know why you mentioned leaders and Eric Dier. It doesn't fit for me.
To defend myself, I think he does have a respect in the dressing room. I think people do respect him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's made vice captain or even captain. Weirdly, like club captain.
Okay, who do you think need to be the captain now that Kane is leaving?
Probably Son.
Son, yeah.
Probably Son, and if Højbjerg was staying, then because of his leadership qualities and him, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dier isn't a part of that conversation. If he's not captain, then vice captain. I don't think it means much anymore anyway. Captains, the game's changed.
I'm with you. I think also Son. We had the discussion last week, and Buzz and Hanan. I think both of you said that Ben Davies should be the captain.
Well, if he's playing,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that either, probably for the same reasons as Dier. Gets it, has been there for a long time. I just think Son, because of what he's done in South Korea, but he's there as an icon, as a captain, rather than what is traditional in the Premier League of what a captain needs to be. But I don't know. We've got rid of a lot of influential players, and we did the same under Pochettino, if you remember, that some of the big names in the squad were shipped out. Because they were no longer useful and they had a big influence. So we'll see, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question. I don't know what the right answer is. But Ben Davies, Eric Dier and Heung-min Son will probably be at the front runners, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I hope Son will be. I think he also, for South Korea, he showed that he's a very good captain. Everybody loves him. And it will be his team, like in South Korea. So he should take us forward.
But in South Korea, like Heung-min Son could fall down some stairs and people would clap in South Korea. Do you know what I mean? He's he's like a god over there. But
yeah. Well, Solomon can also be here in Israel if he will perform well for us. So
I know since we spoke, what are you guys? What's the buzz like in Israel about Solomon and him signing for Tottenham and going to the Premier League?
Every time he takes a shit, there's a they post it in the news here.
Oh, really? It's making the press.
There was a video that from one of the training games that he passed Dier, and then he shot the ball, and it was deflection, and it went inside the net, and yeah. Everybody was crazy. All the media, Solomon scored in a practice match, and we're just he got past Dier. It's not that hard.
but you have to go on.
No, I mean from our perspective is there have been Israeli footballers in the Premier League that have done well, it's been a while. And was it Benny Ewan was at Chelsea and West Ham, but since then you probably know better. Yeah, he was at Liverpool as well. Yeah.
So Arsenal. So
yeah. Was he at Arsenal as well?
Yeah.
We don't like him. He went to all the wrong places.
But he's probably like the biggest in the Premier League history, right? He's like the most successful, would you say?
Yeah, I think he didn't want any title. Ronnie Rosenthal won the championship with Liverpool.
When I was a kid, Ronnie Rosenthal. So we had a massive injury crisis. This would have been, when was it? In the 90s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was it the 90s?
Yeah,
it feels like that. Yeah, and we had a massive injury crisis, and we managed to get Ronnie Rosenthal on a free from Liverpool, and but he was replacing, like, I think injuries to either Sheringham or Klinsmann, if I remember rightly. I might be getting my dates all wrong.
And I think it's correct.
About right, yeah. And I was like, so he came on. He's like, it was all the jury was out, and then we went to South. You'll know about this game, but we went to Southampton in the FA Cup.
The 6-2.
That's right. Yeah. He scored the best hat trick I've ever seen. It was unreal.
Yeah.
We were 2-0 down at halftime and we managed to get it to 2-2 and Ronnie Rosenthal came on and was, he was incredible. But yeah, no, but yeah, I mean, he looks the part. Yeah. He looks like he will feature to some degree in the Spurs side, and he signed a 5-year deal. So it's not like he's not around for a long while. And with Europa League football next season or Champions League football next season, when we have it, it would be important to have a player that's comfortable and an understanding of what's required of him and doesn't need time to bed in. So maybe we'll see the best of Solomon in 12 months' time as opposed to in the next 3 or 4 months. But you guys know better than me. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was quite good in the preseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was fair enough. Like you said, preseason is not an indicator for anything. But it just, I don't know how Ange takes his subs, if he's proactive
yeah,
or if he just leaves the subs for the last 5 minutes like our previous 4 or 5 managers. So, I mean, because we don't have Europe this season, I see him getting minutes maybe in the cups. But again, because we don't have Europe, I'm sure that Ange is going to want to give it a real shot and not, field a second team. So when he was in Fulham and he got his chances, he did do well to prove himself. So if he does that with us, I think he'll get more credit as time goes by.
Yeah.
Excited.
Yeah, we'll see. We have very soon a League Cup game.
Fulham away.
At the end of August. It's not something that we're familiar with, this playing the second round.
I know. It shocked me actually when he came around. I was like, what? Well, how is the League Cup? And then, we're not in Europe anymore.
Yeah. So it will be Manor Solomon derby against Fulham. So
probably he'll definitely start, right?
He must.
There was there a bit of like
score
bad
not celebrate.
Yeah, but he made it clear that he wasn't going to be signing for Fulham, and so that Marco Silva sort of started to phase him out. Is that correct?
Yes, this is what everybody's saying, because he was in such a good form and then just got benched for the rest of the season.
He's very good at cutting in and hitting that shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robin style.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will give us some of the goals that we need.
The Israeli Iron Robin. Sounds good to me.
Only with better air.
It's true.
So beginning of the new season, I think when we set this podcast, I was very excited because new season, new beginning, and then all the issues with Harry Kane just brought me down. So
yeah,
I still want to be positive and excited for the new season. So it starts today with, I think, Man City against Burnley, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And we're playing on Sunday at noon. How excited are you?
I'm all of it's been tempered by Harry Kane for sure, but I am excited. I'm excited to watch a Tottenham Hotspur side that wants to impress its will on the opposition. And the fact that Postecoglou said that he wants our opponents to be terrified of Tottenham, like that's music to my ears. The game where Conte exploded after we drew 3-3 with Southampton. Yeah, I was at the game and I was watching it and I was like, this is so poor. Like, it's so plodding and methodical and the players had clearly sort of checked out on Conte. And it was just, we drove down there, sat there for 90 minutes amongst a really poisonous atmosphere. And I'm just thinking, what am I getting from this? Like, what? Like, this has cost a fortune to be here. And I'm watching this football and I'm hearing people screaming at the pitch. And I'm thinking there's just something completely unenjoyable following Spurs last season. And Postecoglou's come in and changed that completely. And so I'm excited because I'm going to watch us play a brand of football where we will, if we die, we die on our feet as opposed to our knees. Last season, it just felt like we were bending over for other teams and weren't willing to fight. What Postecoglou has created already is a belief that we can go on the pitch and dominate and take control of it and ideally win. But in the first instance, it's just this change in philosophy that I'm excited to see. Hopefully the results will come, but we need to be patient, I think, as a fan base, and realizing that such a seismic shift in the way that we play will have a direct impact on results. It will. It'll be foolish to think that we're going to walk into this season and start winning at a canter. I hope it might happen, but realistically, probably not. So we just have to be patient, and we understand that there are going to be tough results, and there are going to be times where we get undone on the counter, and there'll be times where you think, actually, well, that was a goal we really shouldn't have conceded. It happens elsewhere that Postecoglou's been, but eventually it clicks. And when it clicks, you see something very special. We just need to get to that point where this starts to click and we start to win games at a canter. And we won't see that pragmatic, slow build-up that we saw under previous coaches, and that we're all but sick to our back teeth of seeing. We'll see a brand of football that is exciting, and people will be going to White Hart Lane for the first time in years since third or fourth season in Pochettino's reign, where they're excited to pay their money. It's too much money, too expensive and all that sort of stuff. But at least they'll be excited to see the brand of football in that stadium. And that's down to Postecoglou. So yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, you mentioned going to White Hart Lane. We're from Israel, so some of us go to one game a season, two if we are lucky. Some of us are not going too much. So we don't know this feeling of paying the amount of money that you're saying and go week in, week out to see this awful football that was in the recent last two or three seasons.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, we watch the game, we turn off the TV and get mad at everything else beside us.
Look, full disclosure, I don't do that anymore either. I've moved away, so I don't go to White Hart Lane as much as I used to, and I miss it. But there are people out there paying a fortune, an absolute fortune. And weirdly, I find it more difficult watching Spurs on television on my own or with my old man than I do at the stadium. Like, I've told this story before, so forgive me if you've heard it, but I was with Ricky in the who's on the podcast with me. And we watched us get absolutely battered by Bayern Munich 7-2. The irony of saying that today, but battered by them 7-2. And we managed to just get through it by having a laugh with each other and being in that stadium. Sometimes you can find a way of dealing with bad results, and you kind of, you know, you can, as I've said a couple of times, as is the way of being Spurs fans, you often have to reconcile stuff. So actually going to games is often easier than watching it at home. So I understand the frustrations of watching it from where you guys watch it and then just turning the television off. And then you're just sat with all this sort of negative energy that you have to get out. And so you started a podcast or you go on Twitter. And that's often why you see so much madness on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because these people are watching it, the game, and then they've got nothing to vent. There's no one to talk to. So they're going on to online and just going, burn the club down. You know
what I mean? I think it's also because the way we used to play was so boring and slow, and you didn't enjoy it. You go to the phone, you go to Twitter. I started tweeting during matches, which is something that I never do. But in the last season, I just couldn't. You need to vent. I don't want to see what's in front of me. So I just go to Twitter and tweet.
Yeah. It's we've all been there many times.
Yeah. I think we have, for me, I didn't see a game we lost in White Hart Lane yet. So I have a good...
You've never seen us lose at White Hart Lane?
No, I saw in Israel though.
Oh, in Israel, yeah, Rome. Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but I think maybe the rest of us did saw a lose. Boaz, I think you saw less 2 years ago away game against Brighton, right?
Boaz? I was Brighton away, so we won that. And where did I see us lose? It was Old Trafford away a while back.
Under Pochettino. Not a home game.
But no, all my home games, all wins except Klopp's first game against us. It was 0-0.
I remember that, yeah.
It was his actual first game. I was surprised at how tall he is.
I remember that game. He ran around like Liverpool players ran around like maniacs for 70 minutes and then they just collapsed pretty much. I was just speaking to a guy on another podcast I was doing, and he's an American guy who traveled over to watch Spurs play Liverpool in the Champions League final. But he came to a pub in where we were showing the game. We were doing like one of our Fighting Cock socials, they're called. And he traveled over from Washington, D.C., all the way over to London to watch this game in this pub with the rest of us. And obviously, we went 1-0 down within 40 seconds to a handball that should never have been given. And he shortly went home after that. So, wow. Yeah, that was a great baptism of fire for what it's like to be Spurs. But that's mental. I mean, to travel way over from Washington, D.C. to watch a game in a pub. But it is what it is.
Yeah. I think none of us ever seen the highlights of this game. Also,
I've never watched it back.
Yeah, never.
And I will never. I will never.
I think there was a clip of some player that maybe it was Winks or something that they made a clip of him, and suddenly I see him against Liverpool in that game. I never saw it. It was the first time I felt that I see he's going. He played there.
I don't remember a single thing from the game other than the handball, yes. And I think Origi scoring late on. I remember from the biggest game in the history of our lives.
The Origi goal, I don't remember, but the start. I remember the faces of the fans around me. I remember the face of Boaz near me. Never forget it. Yeah,
it's painful. But look, this is a part of. This is it, isn't it? You have to live through these things. Like, unfortunately, Spurs fans at that level seem to live through it more than most other fans. And yeah. We can be bitter and sad and crestfallen and critical of the club. But we can't do anything to change any of this stuff. So as much as you can, this is what I've learned over the years, is find a way of finding a positive. And you get a lot of stick for it, but there's not much positive about... Actually, there's nothing positive about losing that Champions League final at all. So in that instance, just forget as much as you can about it and move on.
Yeah, I always remember on that night in Amsterdam. This is my recollection of just this Champions League campaign. The final was just another game that happened.
I don't like looking at that game either, weirdly.
Really?
Yeah, I've never watched back... I've watched back the highlights once for another piece of work that I was doing, but I don't like watching it because I know what happens next and I know that Pochettino isn't there anymore. So it's kind of looking back on great memories, but then realizing that there's a massive divorce afterwards. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe now with Pochettino at Chelsea, it will be tough for me to see it, but I usually watch it every year, like the anniversary.
That is sickening, isn't it? It's a sickening thing.
Yeah. The game against... When it will come to White Hart Lane, it will be just awful.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, because there are lots of Spurs fans out there that love him still. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think that if he came back, I'd find it in me to boo. I don't think I'd do that. I'm really unhappy. I wouldn't cheer him even.
Well, I mean, would you clap him off when the game is over or something?
I don't think I'd do anything. I would do nothing. I couldn't bring myself to jeer him or boo him, and I definitely wouldn't clap him off because he's the Chelsea manager and it doesn't feel right. I'd just do nothing. I'd turn up and I'd leave. I wouldn't do anything at all. What would you do?
At this point, I'm kind of like you, but I have the feeling that as we get closer, he's going to say a lot of things in press conferences that are going to get me very angry.
Oh, really?
And I think that when we're at the moment, we are going to definitely feel like we want to boo him. I probably won't be there, but if I would, I think I would definitely boo him. Because knowing him from previous press conferences, he's you know what he's going to say. He's going to talk about how great Chelsea are and... He might give us some stick and talk about Kane leaving and how pathetic we are now that he left.
Do you think that's what he's gonna say? I'd be surprised if he does.
No, not in those words, but he's gonna say that we have new challenges. We don't have the quality to challenge bigger things.
I don't think so, boss. I think he will be.
I think he's going to be really correct, actually.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think he will.
He's like the king of being correct.
You will clap him in the beginning, and then you will curse him when Chelsea will score the first goal, and then boo him when the game ends. But we will start clapping, I think.
Yeah, he's very politically correct, but he's very honest as well. So, you know, he's if something, I'd probably get aggravated by the fact that he'll be putting a mirror in front of our face and pretty much saying, I left you 4 or 5 years ago. You're pretty much in the same place. Look where I'm at now. Not that he's done so much, but at that point, like a week or a few days before the game against Chelsea, the table is probably going to tell a different story.
Look, he came from this club that how did he say? You need new furniture in the new stadium. Now he went to this club that you get all the furniture you want. So
only one player left from that game that we mentioned that none of us saw again. So
yeah,
there was a lot of changes. Okay. We had some questions from our listeners, so Flavio will go through some of them.
Yeah, cool.
If we mentioned the if we use the money that from the sale of Kane, you will use it for a center back. What else? It's a question from Aviatar. He's asking. Yeah. Let's put aside the center back. Who else would you buy? Which position?
We probably need another box to box or attacking midfielder, I would say. And who that is, though, I mean, Eze from Crystal Palace would be an incredible signing.
Yeah.
I think he has 2 years left of his contract. So it'd be expensive, but he's I really love the look of him. And I think Vlahovic, if he is available from Juve, that, you know, they're talking about Juve were looking at buying Lukaku, and I don't know if what that means for him. But that would be an incredible signing as well. I think that fits the mold, and he kind of, that would go some way to sort of fixing the Harry Kane issue. But first and foremost, I know we're not allowed to, in the context of this question, talk about the centre back, but I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, ideally centre back, an attacking midfielder, and number nine.
Are you comfortable with our fullbacks from both sides?
Well, it's not a case of, I don't know, because we're deep in both areas, right? We've got Ben Davies, we've got Reguilon, we've got Adoji. And then on the other side, you've got Porro, Emerson Royale, you've got Tanganga who can play there. You've also, who am I missing? I feel like I'm missing someone else.
Spence.
Yeah, Jed Spence. Yeah, yeah. So there you go. Although if you believe the reports, Jed Spence is now up for transfer.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I mean, we're not going to buy more fullbacks. So this is what we have to deal with. Adoji looks great in pre-season. It's up to Postecoglou to make them work as fullbacks as opposed to wingbacks. I'm fine with that. Emerson Royale will start as right back, in my opinion, and we'll have Adoji on the other side.
Yeah.
I think our squad is okay. I think it's good. There's lots of quality there. And I think we'll score goals without Kane. I'm just a little bit light in midfield.
Yeah. If we compare it for the departure of Bale, more than 10 years ago, I think.
Yes.
I think we can compare it. It's the best player that left us. Bale was the best, and now Kane. Do you more optimistic now than you were in that area?
Much more. more optimistic. I mean, it's only a matter of time before Tottenham get things right. Whether it be this season, next season. We have too much, and this is the way football has gone, we've got too much money to not be okay. We might have seasons where we're eighth and below. Well, actually, probably below eighth, it would be extreme. We'd have to have a mad season like Chelsea did. So we'll be somewhere in that top eight because of the amount of money we generate. So we'll never not be in the conversation, which is something that most other clubs in the, you know, in the English Premier League pyramid, what I can't say, but we are in a mini league with these other big clubs, and we need to compete with them and think of ourselves as a part of that elite. So I think I'm much more optimistic now than with Kane leaving than I was when Bale left. Yeah, for sure.
I have a question from Stefan. He asks if you see in the horizon a return of Harry Kane at an advanced age, like Bale did. And if you, it's in my addition, if you think it's something that Tottenham should do to bring him back.
Well, look, in 2 years, if he's had two blinding seasons in the Bundesliga and he wants to come back to Tottenham to break that all-time Premier League goal-scoring record, then I wouldn't be opposed to it, obviously. But it needs to be on the basis that he's right for us and that he's still as good as he can be. I don't think he should be being brought back on sentiment alone. I thought when Bale came back, it was he gave us something and he was good, but he was half the player that he was than when we left. And he did something for us. When Sheringham came back, the club was in such a state that, you know, it made sense that Sheringham came back, but he didn't really offer much and was like I said, a shadow of his former self. It's about motivation, really. And if Harry Kane is motivated to come back and wants to come back, then yes, of course, we should look to bring him back in a couple of years, because that would be 32, 33 or even 3 years. If you look what Benzema did and how long he did it into his 30s with Real Madrid, I can see Harry Kane having some similar sort of longevity as a player. And if he wants to come back and have some of those twilight years at Spurs and he's still class, then why not? Yeah, of course. I don't think we should cut our nose off to spite our face. But right now, if I never see Harry Kane again, it'd be too soon. I don't want to see his face at the moment. I'm just like, and I know it's not on him, but we just need to, I need to start processing and thinking about the future. And that's one that doesn't include Harry Kane.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have some more questions, but we answered most of them through the episode. Okay. A last question from Yair. Do you think we have a chance for top six this season? You said fifth place.
Yeah, I think great season would be fifth place purely because it means Champions League qualification. I think what will go in our benefit is that no one really expects us. Most people are not predicting that we'll finish in the top five. And so because of that, and they're underestimating what a good squad we have. Like, we're missing a couple of key places, but we have a good squad of players. And so I think we could be hopeful of a Champions League place. And if not, if we finish eighth like we did last season, but there is a system and there is a plan and there is an idea about how we build for the future, but we finish in the same position we did last year, but the football is better, then even that is progress. The worst part of last season wasn't necessarily finish eighth. It was the way we did it. So if we can approach this season as a way of, in true sense, transitional, and taper our hopes for the idea that this is something that's going to take time, but will eventually pay off, then I think that's the healthiest mind state to be in.
Fifth place leading to Champions League playoffs? Is that a new thing?
Yeah, this season.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Fifth
place. Wow. Yeah, top. Five. This the English England, because of the coefficient, England have been given five places.
And I guess it doesn't really matter if anyone wins it from within that top five.
I think it helps. The fact that Man City won it meant, and it meant our coefficient. It means that you just have to get allocated that extra place.
If Man City wins again, and then some club is English club wins the Europe. Europa League, they both get tickets for the Champions League next season. Then sixth and seventh place will go to qualification, or it's impossible.
It feels like impossible and unfair.
Maybe it's our chance.
It's 12th to 13th season all over again. It will work the other way around. But
yeah,
I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting, because I know that you know, here in Israel, Maccabi Haifa normally reach the later playoff stages for qualification.
Yeah.
So if that happens, that could actually bring Spurs here again, hopefully.
Hopefully it will not be Maccabi Haifa, it will be Maccabi Tel Aviv with Robbie Keane.
All right. That's also a possibility.
Who do you guys follow in the Israeli league?
I'm Maccabi Tel Aviv. So Robbie Keane is my favorite player of all time in Tottenham. So he's now coaching my team in Israel.
Is he?
So it's incredible. Okay. And he's doing quite good from the beginning. So maybe we'll see him in England in the future.
Maybe.
Maybe even in Tottenham. with Jonathan, and Jonathan Woodgate will be his assistant.
That makes sense.
Hanan, Boaz, do you have any more questions for Flav? Or not questions, just saying something before we finish?
No, I think we ran through the majority of it. No.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I want to say it's just great having you, and love listening to your podcast, and just it's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here, and it's anytime. If you want me on in the future, I'm happy to do it. And thanks for listening. It's weird because when you're recording the pod, I'm doing it essentially from my office here, and the boys are now we do it all remotely. So you forget that people listen. So it's always interesting when people say like they enjoy the pod. It's always lovely to hear. So thank you very much, boys, and thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It was very fun.
Thank you.
Hopefully our season will be as good as your podcast.
Cheers. I hope so. I mean, I don't know. I think that's about an eighth or ninth place finish, but thank you, though.
Okay. So thank you again, and bye.